The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Hines with Vince Farrar. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN, brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. We do need to cover this. Vince, I want to ask you, there's been some scuttlebutt about Eve Pons, the rising senior at Tennessee in basketball. He has until midnight tonight to declare whether he's going to stay in the NBA draft or return to Tennessee. What are you hearing?
Well, there is a tweet sent out by ESPN college basketball analyst Sean Farnham, who I really like. I think he is exceptional at his job. He tweeted out that Eve Pons was returning to Tennessee. Big news. He'll be one of the best defenders in the country, and it will make Tennessee a top 10 team in the country. Moments after that, he deleted that tweet, and then he sent out another tweet which said, "Just got a call on Eve Pons. Was told by a source that he was 100% to return to Tennessee. Now being told he is having second thoughts, but still leaning to return to Rocky Top. Stay tuned, dot, dot, dot." So people ran with the first tweet. Now people are sharing the second tweet. And it's bizarre. I would be surprised, guys, if Eve Pons was indecisive like that this late in the process, but who knows. That's the latest, and he was the only one to put that out there other than other people repackaging Sean Farnham's tweet and claiming it as their own, which is part of our news cycle today.
Yeah. So, Doc, what do you think? Do you think Pons should return? Should he stay in the NBA draft? How do you see it?
Well, I mean, selfishly, I hope he returns. I think he's a fabulous defender, great player. Love watching his energy. I love watching his up and down the floor. The hustle factor, I think that's infectious on the team, although I think most of his teammates are equally motivated. But from a standpoint, I realize the NBA is the ultimate goal. Like, people wanting to get to the upper level, want to get to the NFL or get to the Cup Series in NASCAR. But in a year where there's so much uncertainty and so much confusion and people playing in bubbles, of all seasons, maybe to stay put and just the old pig in the poke, you know what you got at Tennessee. You got a great coach who cares about your players and you care about each other. You can't get that year back. It's like family. You know, of all times, maybe to stay put and say, I want to be a part of this. This is special. I can't get this back. In the NBA, who knows what's going to happen there, the rules. The bubble situation, who's playing where, what's happening there, with the uncertainty there in the league, I'd stay put. I'm not paying his bills, but I think that financially he's probably okay from what I understand. But, selfishly, I'd like to see him stay. I think he this year could be an incredible, contributor, and not that he wasn't last year for Tennessee and Coach Barnes.
Yeah, and I had said that I think he should return to Tennessee and that he needs to improve his offensive game. And I mentioned he needs to take his scoring average from about 10 to 15 or 16. Mark Pankratz corrected that. He said he does need to improve his offensive game, but it's going to be hard to average that many with such a well-rounded team. So I'll concur. I'll agree with that. But he does need to improve his scoring average. He needs to improve his ball handling, and he needs to improve his shooting on the move. Those are things that I think he could do at Tennessee to ensure he would be a first-round draft pick. Otherwise, I had an NBA scout that told me he's more likely to not be drafted than to be a first-round pick. So that was that's the latest on Eve Pons. Let's go to the phones, where Jim is our next caller. Jim, you're on with Doc Punch.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Afternoon.
Hey, Jim. Now,
hello, Dr. Punch. You know, I'll be satisfied if Eve Pons comes back and just gets 12 a game.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, I'll take that. You know, if Dr. Punch wanted, I don't want much. I wanted to ask you about the situation in the Pac-12 of the group of players with their list of demands threatening opt-out or boycott or whatever word you want to use if those demands are not met. What do you think of that situation, and where do you think this goes?
I'm not sure. I saw that. I started out with some players, in Oregon, and after what I've seen take place in Portland the last 3 months, I'm not sure if I understand what's in the water out there, what's happening. I think everybody, the schools themselves realize they want to do what's right in terms of social equality and social justice. I'm not sure players standing up and trying to force a conference's hand or an individual or school's hands is the way to get things done. I'm not so sure what the message is you're sending, except for the fact that, you're putting yourself in a position of us versus them, and I'm not sure there's enough of the us to make a difference. From what I saw in the numbers that I've signed on, I haven't read specifically what they want, other than they want certain demands made in terms of social inequities. And it's the Pac, and I don't mean this to be ugly, but it is the Pac-12, and it is the West Coast. It's California and Oregon. And who knows, if you've ever been out there and watched the news at night, is there anybody on the news that isn't complaining about not getting something? I get confused on who wants what and who's, it's remember when it was, how long ago did Jim or Jimmy, did Tennessee play at California in Berkeley, and there were people sitting in trees out there walking in the stadium. So and I'm not trying to be ugly, but they're just different I get that you want certain things, but I'm not sure that's the way to get it, to say we're not going to play unless we get this and this. If I'm the conference commissioner, I say, well, we're going to miss you. We're really going to miss you.
That's interesting you say that, because I mean their demands, they're not just on health concern demands, which are certainly expected, reasonable, and so forth, but they do go into social demands, but they also go into economic demands, which
right.
you're not going to flip a switch and make those kind of changes. And I just wonder, I think colleges have said, look, we're going to honor scholarships if a kid has a genuine concern about his health, especially depending on whether or not there's even other people on campus, whether school's in session on campus. But when it gets to this point where there are demands being made of whether we're going to play or not play, then I wonder, are these scholarships really going to be honored if we're getting into a demand kind of situation,
Well, I agree. I think you can't. I don't think this is the way it goes. Trying to hold these schools hostage and say, I understand some of the social issues that they want addressed. I get that. But even going back to Northwestern's, when the players said, we want to try to figure out why can't we unionize, and all that went through the legal system there in terms of the NCAA, they had some legitimate gripes and grievances that were heard. But this situation is completely different. And I agree. You start trying to hold these schools hostage because you want economic rewards, then maybe, I don't know. I'm sort of a hardball. I probably wouldn't be a good athletic director, and gotta love people like Philip Fulmer and others that can handle these kind of things and smile in both directions. But I probably couldn't do that. I'd probably say, we're really gonna miss you. Go ahead and go to the NFL draft or the NBA Development League. Because we're going to do what we can for the students who want an education and want a scholarship that we're providing for them, in spite of the fact that we may or may not play. We're going to honor that scholarship and give you an education, and you're not going to hold a knife to us or going to try to leverage us or blackmail us into getting money for whatever reason that others aren't getting. So it isn't going to work that way. I just think you got to be, they're trying to bully the schools, and I don't know how you. It's not just not the social issue, it's the financial issue that I have a problem with.
Yeah, yep. Well, Jimmy said it earlier. He said the Pac-10 commissioner's making over $5 million a year. Let's start having him earn it.
Absolutely. I'm not sure he could, but now's a good chance he can start.
He's cut his pay to $470,000. That's
okay.
All. Yeah, yeah. So I don't know how he's going to live on that.
Yeah. Well, guys, good to talk to you. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks, Jim. And by the way, my understanding is the Pac-12 and the SEC, maybe others have done this too, but those two conferences have said if players opt out for COVID-19 reasons, then they will honor their scholarship. I don't know about a threatened boycott, and I don't know. I'm going to guess the Big Ten has probably done that. I don't know about the ACC or the Big 12. They may have, but I don't know that. All right, let's go to Doug. Doug, you're on with Doc Punch.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Afternoon.
Hey, Doug. Hey, I was calling about something else, but evidently they don't teach finance in California. You go in and make your demands when your company or your employer or your school is making the most money. You don't go in when they're facing bankruptcy like this now.
Yeah. They must have missed that day in class. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to ask particularly Dr. Punch, if any of y'all watched the St. Jude Classic yesterday, put Bryson DeChambeau's swing in slow motion.
Yeah.
And it was 18,000 frames per second. How in the world do they make a camera like that?
Yeah, I don't know how to evaluate that. I heard that. I felt sorry for the golf ball, right? When you see the compression on the golf ball, it's like, oh, my gosh. I'm nice. Let me just say this. I'm nicer to a golf ball than he is.
yeah, he said, Faldo said, if I was that golf ball, I'd probably take two of leaves or Tylenol, I think.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I wanted to ask Doc Punch, speaking of technology, what is, and I'm sure a lot of technology plans have been put aside after the first part of this year, what is the highest or the sharpest HDTV now that is commercially available for something like the Super Bowl? Is it 4 or 8, 16?
Oh, my gosh, it depends on, I know it's beyond 4. I think and it depends on different, I'm not a TV expert, although mine are 4K. There are, and I did buy the 3D ones when they were coming out because ESPN told me they were going to have 3D because I was going to be doing some 3D games, and I still have the 3D television, but there's no 3D exist anymore. So I guess to show you how much I know about it. Everyone calls it something different. There are some that call it, there's a 6K version. The problem is that not a lot of programming, only a few live sports and a few movies on streaming services are actually streamed or produced live in 4K. So that's the thing, that's what they don't tell you, that a lot of normal programming is not 4K or above in high definition. That's why when you go to buy these televisions, they run a streaming or a movie that is in that kind of high definition. I can't tell you what the latest and greatest is right now. I know it's above 4K, but most people that I know of that I talked to, other announcers I've talked to, if you get 4K, you're in good shape.
Okay, great. Well, Doc, I bet you'd look good in 4K 3D. You'd really be handsome, wouldn't you?
Yeah, as long as you got a wide screen, I'm in good shape, yeah.
See you guys, thanks.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks for the call, Doug. And when we come back, we've got Doc Punch for one more segment. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Turn us up and embarrass the Alabama fan that sits in the next cubicle. This is 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrar. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville.
Doc, back to NASCAR. How do you think the sport overall has handled the pandemic and the return to the sport when it's so dependent on sponsorships and that money has got to be difficult to come by?
Great question, Vince. Here's the interesting part is that when the pandemic and the quarantine and everything associated with limiting sports and activities and groups to getting together to practice
You know, the one sport that seems to have found a way, because it was uniquely positioned to compete without crowds and without social and with social distancing, was NASCAR. Getting back to Darlington with no fans there, specific rules, the entire world was watching because it was the first major league sport to come back and do a live event. The drivers drove in, stayed in their car, their motorhome, walked right to their car, their race car, and got in themselves and put their belts on. Carried their own helmet, carried their own water bottle, didn't have all the people working for them to be around them. Interviews were done with a microphone on a 6-foot pole. They did a great job. And what happened, what we found out, is that the pandemic forced NASCAR's hand and made them do some things they probably would not have ordinarily done for years, meaning shorten some races, run double headers, think outside the box, run a weeknight, a Wednesday night primetime show on national television. And what's happened, those things have been win-wins. They've been slam dunks. The ratings have been good. We're getting fans back, the response from fans online, the response from sponsors you mentioned who are struggling financially. Some are struggling financially right now, but the sponsors that are able to be able to function have said, this is really cool. Why didn't we think of this a long time ago? And it's all as a result of what the pandemic made NASCAR do. And there are people, I think, and Jimmy, you may want to chime in on this as well, who believe that the pandemic forcing conferences like the SEC to play 10 conference games, you know, because that could be a win-win down the road, because you play conference games, that's going to be attendance, that's going to be more interest, more television ratings, maybe more sponsorship involvement down the road. Maybe you're going to realize, hey, this, in a world in which, you know, that's driven by the economics, this could be a win-win for us. I know we'll probably have limited fan attendance this year, and everyone's working as hard as they can, developing the different models as the week goes on as to how many fans they can get in. But in years when you can't allow all the fans back, the 10 conference game schedule or the 10 plus one or whatever may be the way to go. And it all started by being forced from the pandemic.
I would like to see a 10-game SEC schedule with two non-conference games down the road. I don't think the league will do it. I think they feel like they would cannibalize themselves and have too many losses and jeopardize the possibility of getting into the college football playoff. So while I would favor 10 plus 2, I don't think they'll do it. Vince, do you?
If it was in conjunction perhaps with an expanded playoff, but that seems unlikely in the next couple of years until they run through that contract. So I could see it with an expanded playoff to where you could overcome an extra loss or perhaps even two. But before that, with just four teams, I don't see them doing that. Doc, to that point a little bit, with all these conferences deciding on what to do with their format, how involved do you think the networks, especially ESPN, ABC, have been in communicating with them about the inventory of games that they'd like to have?
I think given the money that's involved and what's at stake in terms of desperately needing live sports programming and conferences needing the revenue, and they're sort of in this together. They're a team, the SEC network, the SEC ESPN, the same way with the ACC network, and the long-term contract that moves ahead beyond CBS for the SEC. I think they're heavily involved, Vince, and I think that, you know, being able to have the 10 conference games, and fans not being able to go maybe as much this year, and I've got to believe, just like NASCAR, we're going to see viewership skyrocket. We're going to see people watching these marquee games. There may be fewer on, I believe, but you know, I think people are going to be watching these marquee games. The ACC, they've got to love that, being able to get Notre Dame to come to all these different locations and play, you know, five games away in conference away from home. The five they'll play at home will be on their network. Now, they'll play Duke and Clemson, Florida State, Syracuse, and Louisville at home on NBC, and then the NBC revenue will be shared within the conference among the conference participants, which has not happened in the past. So it's a win-win for the ACC and the television networks, combining NBC, ESPN, and ABC there. I think the same way with the SEC. So I think, you know, in what I was saying, I understand the SEC probably wouldn't want to go to a 10-game conference schedule, because when you got a conference that's sort of the heavyweight champion of college football, when in terms of every year getting a chance to get at least one, if not two, in the conference, in the Final Four, the championship playoff. And I could see how you would not want to overburden your teams with conference play when you could play non-conference games a little bit easier in between the heavyweight games you have to play. But I think television's heavily involved in some of this decision-making in terms of the schedule.
Last thing for me, Doc, and on the subject of college football returning, you mentioned you're optimistic that we'll be able to play. And I wonder if maybe you feel more of a level of confidence in the technology that the schools are going to be using, the resources that they might have, like the Whoop technology, the contact tracing that Tennessee is using. Also, LSU put out these shields for the helmets that they're going to have in play, and I'm sure there are other things as well. Maybe frequency of testing far beyond the minimum. How much confidence does that give you? Do you anticipate that maybe those things will be executed at a greater level to try to keep everybody safe, more so than maybe what the public image might be?
I think those schools understand. I think the coaches, and maybe even more importantly, the athletic directors at the Philip Fulmer kind of level, they have made their staffs, you know, aware, you know, probably over aware of what has to happen if we have a chance to play the game. And that has to go campus wide. It has to be to the chancellor and the president, because you can't have students come in and suddenly you have a surge on campus because of parties and groups and collections of fraternities and sororities and dormitories, et cetera. And then you shut school down a month in, and suddenly then what happens to college football? It's gotta be transmitted. That kind of discipline has to be transmitted across the board for the students who do come back and are in class. I think to try to eliminate that, I talked to an administrator at one of the colleges, major universities in Mississippi, and his prediction was we'll be back in school 1 month and then we'll be shut down again because we'll have a surge here. I hope he's wrong. I hope that doesn't happen. But as far as football is concerned, I know some medical staffs at other SEC schools, and they are working diligently with shields and gloves and hand washing, not only to protect the players, but to protect the coaching staff. You got 40, 50, 60-year-old coaches and beyond. You got officials that are in their 40s and 50s on the sidelines. You got a lot of other people that are support staff that must be in place for a college football game to occur. So you have to, it's your responsibility as an athletic trainer, as a certified athletic trainer and a medical staff on these football teams, to not only protect the players, but to go beyond that for the staff that's on the sidelines. And so I think they're working really diligently for that to happen. It is it's a yeoman effort, and I think giving the time to start the SEC schedule to the middle of September or beyond is wise. I think, again, another point to applaud what Greg Sankey has done leadership-wise, to give people time to get ready.
Doc, what's this week hold for you?
Well, we're sort of waiting to hear what's going to happen with college football, and every time the phone rings, it's a different solution or a different question or a different what if. So I don't think anybody knows who's on first at the old Abbott and Costello, or what's on second. But I was in Memphis over the weekend where they had the golf tournament there in the rain, I've traveled a little bit. I'm going to be in Charlotte this week for some meetings with some of the folks at NASCAR. So a lot of interesting. I'm going to be doing a lot of listening the next few days, and I will. And what I hear, I will be happy to pass along next Monday.
All right, Doc, we appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Doc.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks so much.
And that is Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. When we come back, we will have more with Vince Farrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. This is Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal. Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. Always appreciate Doc Punch joining us each Monday. There has been some news involving a VFL, Rashawn Golden, with the New York Giants. Vince, what's up with him?
Yeah, he was released. The Giants cutting their roster down. Teams until the 17th have a choice. They can either go to an 80-man roster, which would be will allow them to have most of their team there at one time during their practices, or they can stick to 90 but then have to split their team up and not have as many people in the facility at the same time. So each team is handling it differently, and you're seeing a number of moves sort of trickle in. So Rashawn Golden was part of the cuts yesterday. The VFL was released. And then with Juwan James announcing today that that he was opting out, he actually just put out a release. He cited the his family just had a newborn in May, and there are just so many unknowns about the virus and about plans and handling it going forward that they made that decision. They said it was tough, but it's the right decision. So there was more in his release. We just shared it on the Sports Animals Twitter account at Sports Radio WNML if you want to read that Juwan James a note on his opting out. But it drops the active Vols of the NFL, Jimmy, down to 26. And it has gone down. It is it will trickle down a lot. 11 have dropped off of active rosters in the last 2 weeks. So now with James, there are three others. James and three others are on active roster, are inactives right now. James is still with the Denver Broncos, but he'll be inactive this season. Michael Pilardi out for the year with a torn ACL. Plus, you have two players on the reserve COVID-19 list in Nigel Warrior with the Ravens, and then the most recent, Justin Coleman, with the Lions. So there's 26 active roster VFLs in the NFL right now, with four others being inactive. And, Jimmy, this number is going to continue to go down. Teams are not going to carry as many players, and there were a lot of Vols that were sort of on the fringe of getting in there. So, unfortunately, for the last week or so, we've seen this news every other day. I'm having to update the blog on the website with more changes, and it continues today with the news of Juwan James and Rashawn Golden.
So, Charlie, before we went on the air, the last time I had checked, there were 43 NFL players that have opted out. That number's up to at least 45 now?
Yes, 45. ESPN has a complete list of them, and they update every day. Also, the NFL sends theirs out, but theirs is a little bit different. Maybe because of paperwork or whatever, their announcements of a player being listed on their official transaction sometimes is a couple of days later. But ESPN is tracking the ones that have made it public. And with James, Josh Harvey Clemens from Washington, and Christian Miller, a former Alabama linebacker from the Carolina Panthers, those three were added to today's list. So that bumps it up to 45 on the opt-out. But then on the COVID list, Jimmy, the reserve COVID list, that number is over, I want to say it's 88. It's high. I'll have to update to see what today's number is. But there's also been now 10 that have returned that I've seen that have returned to active roster, 9 prior to today and 1 more I've seen today. But there'll be others that the NFL releases in their official transactions later on. But so you're starting to see in the last couple of days a few more players being added back to the active rosters. But that number of players that are going on that list, Jimmy, grows. Some teams are putting 2, 3, 4, 5 players at a time on that list. The Jaguars have probably been the most active with players on and off. So that's something to kind of keep an eye on between players on that list and opt-outs. That's a chunk of your league right there. You still got a lot more players with expanded rosters, but you're starting to see starters. You're seeing starters opt out and end up on that list, as you mentioned Matthew Stafford earlier. It's something to keep an eye on. It's not, as you mentioned, not a guarantee that those players tested positive. with Justin Coleman, the Detroit Times Free Press reported that Coleman had tested positive. The league isn't putting that information out, but they reported it. They had a quote from Coleman saying that he was feeling fine. He didn't have really any symptoms. But right now, it's kind of the reality of the league right now with that COVID list and opt-outs. Those are as active as anything else in the NFL transactions right now.
Jaguars quarterback Gardner Minshew, he's on that reserve COVID list as well. He's one of five Jags that are on that list so far. And it is fluid, as we've talked about. And also, as you pointed out, you've got some that have already returned. So, and here's the other thing, too. I wonder how many of them end up getting COVID and then decide, okay, now I'm opting out. I don't want to go through this. So I think you may have some that were intent on playing, and then the virus hit them, and they said, no, I'm not worth it.
Yeah, and look, I've heard of people that get it more than once. I know there's some theories out there that once you have it, you know, antibodies or whatever. But I've known there's a reporter for the WWE. She has stated that she just got it for the second time that she recovered.
What was the time frame?
She didn't specify that, but she just said this is the second time she's had it. Could have been over a couple of months period of time. I'm not sure. So
somebody that had it told me that they were told that you could get it within the next, you could get it 3 months later. So that's why I was curious about that time frame. Now look, all this stuff changes, as we know.
Right.
So it might have been thought that they told this guy, hey, it's 3 months, and then we find out, well, no, it's actually 2 months, or no, it's actually 1 month. So we're still figuring out some of this thing on the fly.
Right, and so to all of the, you know, air quote experts that are out there, there's different opinions. Depends on where you get your information, and sometimes even those same people that give you your information change because the goalpost changes. So they're still learning, and that's kind of what Juwan James referenced in his statement, Jimmy, is there are so many unknowns, and when you're thinking about the life of a newborn baby and impacting someone's life other than you, if you're a single guy and you're maybe away from your family and you can get through the season and, you know, see them afterwards or when this chills out, that's one thing. But when you're dealing with other people's lives, including newborn kids, it takes another level adds another level of pressure and urgency to the situation, that even if you don't have all the answers, the unknown is pretty scary. And that's how some of these guys are coming to those decisions.
When we come back, we've got some more bad news with Major League Baseball. We'll discuss that. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Farrar. You're listening to Sports Talk 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The Sports Animal and Alexa are best friends. Just tell her, Alexa, enable the 99.1 The Sports Animal skill.
Skill enabled.
Then anytime you want immediate Tennessee sports info, say, Alexa, play 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Okay, playing 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Farrar. Vince, the St. Louis Cardinals, they have postponed their upcoming series with Detroit. That's four more games being postponed. There were six more that tested positive today, a combination of players and people in the organization that has run that total now to 13. Boy, it's going to be hard to make those games up, but the Cardinals and the Marlins have been hit the hardest by COVID-19, and it has wreaked havoc with the scheduling in baseball. I actually had a number earlier of the number of games that have been postponed, but now that we add these to the list, I'm not exactly sure what we've gotten to, but I'm pretty sure we're in the 20s as far as games that have been postponed so far.
Yeah, it's, you know, unfortunately it is getting worse. And one thing to track with this is the possibility that some of the Cardinals went to a casino. In fact, they've already started calling it Casino Gate, where John Mosliak, the president of baseball operations was asked to address that, and he said that those claims are not true to his knowledge. I assume that that means that a bunch of players went to a casino at some point. He said that the team does not feel it should have done things differently on the road and suggested the virus was traced back to St. Louis, but he declined to share how close contact tracing got to a specific pinpoint. That's from Ben Fredrickson, who does an awesome job, friend of us on the station from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. So they're tracking to see, hey, what's going on with this? Why did this happen? And, you know, if the fact that they won't specify how it happened sends out alerts that maybe there were missteps, but he says they shouldn't have done anything differently. So we'll see how it plays out. And you hope that there weren't, you know, guys making bad decisions because, you know, it seems like there was some of that with the Marlins.
I had had 24 games postponed entering today. That's six more. That takes it to 30. There could have been other postponements that I have not been able to see as I try to keep up with this moving target. But that's a lot of games so far that have been postponed. We also saw something in baseball that we had not seen since 1912. The Reds swept the Tigers in 2 7-inning games and a doubleheader yesterday. It's the first time in Major League Baseball there is a doubleheader in which each game was 7 innings. You got to go back to 1912 to find the last time that that occurred. Clayton Kershaw making his debut Sunday, 5 2/3, didn't give up a run as the Dodgers beat Arizona 3-0. A Detroit relief pitcher, Tyler Alexander, struck out the first 9 batters he faced. That's not a bad start. Mike Trout returning today. He was on paternity leave as his wife gave birth to a baby last week. So he is to be back with the Angels today. And, there was a Milwaukee bench coach, Pat Murphy, had a heart attack. He was hospitalized. He is said to be okay, but that was kind of a scare, obviously, for Milwaukee to see that occur. So that's it for baseball. As far as I know, we've got and there was an interesting situation with the Milwaukee. So the Rockets were down, I think I got this right, the Rockets were down 7 with less than 60 seconds left. They ended up beating Milwaukee. Teams this year were 2-711 when they were down by at least 7 points with 60 seconds left. How about that one? And Milwaukee was 50-0 when they had a lead by 7 with 60 seconds left. Here's another mind-blowing stat. Milwaukee out-rebounded the Rockets by 29 and lost.
Yeah, but Houston was defending. They didn't rebound, but they were defending much better than they had in the previous game against Dallas. So, those are crazy stats. And one thing on Tyler Alexander, that actually ties an American League record for most strikeouts in a row for Tyler Alexander. That was, you know, just incredible. You saw Nick Castellanos looking at him like, man, what is that?
Where did you come from?
Struck out at the end, right? And then also Clayton Kershaw made his season debut for the Dodgers, went 5 2/3. So that was noteworthy for Major League Baseball. And then you're talking about the NBA, Jimmy. Today is already one game final and 2 games underway. The Raptors beat the Miami Heat 107-103. So the Raptors get a win there as they're trying to position for seeding. The Denver Nuggets are leading the Oklahoma City Thunder 41-31 right now, late second quarter. And the Indiana Pacers have a 1-point lead over Admiral Schofield and the Washington Wizards 39-38. That one also with about 4 and change left to go in the second quarter.
So over the weekend, Toronto beats the Lakers. The Lakers have not beaten Toronto since 2014. That's just hard to fathom.
Yeah.
Long time.
I was impressed by Toronto, Jimmy. I'm one to wear, because people made a lot of big declarations off of that Lakers win over the Clippers on night one. And I'm not one to take one game and have it apply to everything you're going to see moving forward. But I've been impressed by what I've seen from the Toronto Raptors. I mean, they have more options there than what people might think. They're a deep team. Kyle Lowry is maybe playing the best ball I've seen him play. We'll see if that translates into the playoffs, which it hasn't always in the past. But, man, Van Vliet and Lowry, Okungbo, they have so many options there. I've been really impressed by the Toronto Raptors. But I watched a lot of NBA this weekend. It's been fun. Watch NHL. There's NHL games going on right now, too. It was such a really fun weekend with all those options we had to watch.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm Jimmy Himes. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about SEC scheduling. We'll bring up a topic that John Pennington had on the Sports Source. Would you prefer the SEC play just a 10-game schedule, period? Or would you like them playing 12 games with the non-conference games that they've been playing in the past? We'll tackle that when we come back. You're listening to Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.